Hello and welcome to all of our two and four-legged listeners. Welcome back to What the Bark. I'm Nathan from Rightpaw, and joining me as always is everyone's favorite geneticist, Genetic George. Welcome, George.
Hi, Nathan. Favorite geneticist. Lately, I've been the second favorite, but that's okay. I'm happy to keep that mantle.
You've been George in the trenches with Oravet.
In the trenches, yeah. That's right. But, you know, I'm here. These podcasts are the only thing that sort of keep me going. Really?
Keep you saying. I know you've been fighting fires and trying to get orate times down. And there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes.
And we couldn't have a better breed on today than fighting fires. This breed that we're going to have on is a little fiery little breed. Anyway, we'll talk more about that. But you're happy to be on What the Bark and happy to have this guest on today talking about this breed.
Absolutely. And not only are we doing another breed spotlight, which I'm very excited about, but we're also, I think this is the first time we're having sisters as guests in we had Di Gooding on very, very early on. Probably I think she might have even been our first guest. And we've come full circle because we now have Di's sister.
You know what? Literally at the intro, I looked at Robin and I go, Robin, you look like someone I know.
Yes.
And I was this close to saying, do you know? And I thought, no, it just can't be a cook. And that's where it is. I should have called it out.
You should have known.
Yes. No, very excited. Welcome, so Robin Dodds from Pomfire Pomeranians. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you, Robin. Nathan. Lovely to be here. Looking forward to it. And hello, George.
Hi, Robin.
Lovely to have you. You're my favourite geneticist, that's for sure. And I know a lot of Pom people are the same.
Oh, look, lovely. And you know what? A shout out to Di as well. She's one of my favourite Spitz breeder people out there with a chow.
Di has always been very heavily involved in animals and she's very clever, very intelligent.
She used to organise these great retreat days for the breed.
Absolutely. I've got to tell you though, when most people ask me, am I related to Di? I ask them why.
Yeah, that's the reason I didn't bring it up because of this breeder world, Robin Howe can be so fickle and competitive. I thought Cheryl might be nice to me but could be awful to others. So I wanted
the money or
that's right.
Exactly.
I have won a couple of bottles of wine out of it. Apparently she'd won a raffle, so I'm happy to claim those.
There you go. And I've got a quick question I have to ask. So Robin, are you more commonly known as Di's sister or is Di more known as Robin's sister?
Oh no, I'm Di's sister.
Oh, okay.
Have always been. I'm a bit younger than Di, 18 months. And all the way through school, Di was Dodsy at school. And I was Dodsy's sister. In the dog world, I'm Di's sister. Yes.
Right. Hopefully after this podcast, that'll change.
Exactly. In the Pomeranian world, I'm sure.
That's right. That's right.
It's the other way around.
Di will be your sister.
She has the Pomeranians. She leased a bitch off me and had Poms.
I don't want to put this into a – but when you look at the Pom, it is a smaller version of the Chow in some way. And when you look at it, just if you had to stick it into a tube and said, let's dwarf this, it has similarities.
Yeah. And we're going to get to that, I think, because it's definitely, I think in the history of the breed, it's gotten a little smaller over time, but we'll get to that. But Robin, let's go back to the beginning a little bit. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in breeding, how you got started in Pomeranians. Obviously, I'm sure it stemmed from Di's love of animals as well.
It did. So Di and I used to, when we were in primary school, we started caring for family and friends' animals. Sometimes they would come to our place. More often than not, we would go to their place after school and feed them and walk them and that sort of thing. We were ever collecting for RSPCA and different things. Of course, as we got older, Di was given a Doberman to show. Sorry, no, she wasn't. She was given a German Short-Haired Pointer to show. And I went along with her and then she...
Thank God you corrected that because Di would have corrected it if you hadn't jumped in.
His name was Hagen. I can remember that. And those were the days where you'd turn up to the show with your dog on its chain and maybe a wet cloth to wipe it over. That was it. Yeah. You were lucky if you had a chair to sit on, not like these. We got into breeding and have generally shared our breeds for quite some time. And I ended up with beagles and I went to Shar Pei's and Chow's. I had beagles for 20 odd years. I always wanted a Pom, just with young children and work. I didn't have time for the coat. So once the kids moved on and I was semi-retired, along came my first Pomeranian. And that was 7 years ago and I haven't looked back. Yeah, I've been very lucky, had some great mentors, and my first Pomeranian was a very good Pomeranian. His owner's never forgiven herself for selling him to me. I've done very well, so that's
You've gone smaller and smaller. You've gone from the German Shorthaired Pointers to the Shar Pei's and Chows to the Beagles to the Poms. It's been like a little...
And you can fit so many more in.
Yeah, and just to clarify, Robin.
Yes?
They're called the Pom. People are probably thinking that's an abbreviation from Pomeranian. It's not because they have English descent.
No, nothing to do with Pommies.
They're nothing to do with Pommies, but they do come from somewhere that's... it's Pomerania. I've been doing some research.
Yes, it was a country called Pomerania, and it was in Western Germany, is in that area. So it's been taken over by Western Germany quite a few years ago now.
There you go.
In Europe in particular, they don't call them Pomeranians. They're all Spitz, and they just have a size attached.
Yeah, I like that. The pint size Spitz. I like that Spitz, which is the sort of more ancient.
They even allow over there for you to re-register. So if you're Pomeranian, for example, your Spitz toy got too big, it could be re-registered as a Spitz small.
Wow.
And go up the range, where in Australia we don't allow that.
And they're an Arctic Spitz.
Sorry?
They're an Arctic Spitz breed?
That's right. Arctic, they are an Arctic breed, which is why they do have a longer muzzle. They should have a longer muzzle, I should say. Not all of them do. You've seen that breeds have their trends, and a lot of the trend in Pom is to shorten that nose, which makes them look very cute, but it's not actually correct.
We don't want to go to the shortening of the noses and
No, that's right.
No flat face breeds.
Who on earth would want to own a brachycephalic breed?
No, exactly right.
Especially two of them.
Especially George.
Yeah, especially two of them.
I have had a Pomeranian as a pet, so yes, I know about that.
And just popularity-wise, how do they sit? Have they always remained popular? They've gone up or down? And what is it?
I think, like a lot of breeds, they go through their phases. Some people are a little bit nervous about having to care for the coat, which is not difficult. It's more than a beagle coat, which is a wash and wear. But it's not as difficult as a poodle coat to care for. So I think that puts a few people off from time to time.
It is a double coat, right?
It's a double coat, yes. Yeah, that thick undercoat with then the longer guard hairs that come out. Mm. That's right.
So regular, stripping is it called? Is it,
not stripping. So they don't shed as such. When I mentioned I had a pug, the pug would leave a lot more hair around than a Pomeranian ever does.
Yeah.
So what you do need to do is they do need a very good brush. For a pet, once a week, a really good brush, that will take out all that coat that's come loose. And then you won't have it all over the house. You take it out in your brush, toss it in the bin, and it's all very good. Pretty easy to look after, really. One good, decent brush a week.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, probably get a bit put off by just how fluffy it can be, and they think it's going to be very high maintenance. But, sounds like it's not as intense as it sounds.
Yeah.
And I must admit,
I did say that I put off getting one because I was worried about how much maintenance it would require with the coat. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised once I did look into it that there actually isn't that much maintenance involved. Yeah, which is
interesting. And tell me about, because when I sometimes see them as pups, they have this really nice sort of foxy face that I call it. It looks like a fox almost. And you look at them, especially that the coat colour changes, am I right? It starts as a dark colour and moves more.
It does, and it's often a work in progress, their colour. So they can look very grey and fluffy as babies. And that can come through to a complete cream colour as an adult. Yeah, and I've got one out the back at the moment. He looks quite funny. He's dropped all his coat at 6 months of age and his face looks almost bald. It's very short hair on his face and it looks like a little lion mane. And a strip down, you know how an Afghan has a strip down their back? A strip down his back. And so his face and this strip is a very deep red and the rest of him is cream, fluffy. So he will eventually be that darker red colour. Yeah.
Something unique about that coat, isn't there, really, about the Pom?
Yes.
And it's amazing as well because I didn't know, Robin, when you talked about the overseas Spitz variants, that it's effectively just one breed. And I was doing some research before the podcast to find out where the Pomeranian came from. And it, from what I could see, it looked like at some point they were actually, a much bigger breed, or that they were potentially from their Arctic Spitz origins, even carrying sleds at some points as well. So is that where they started and they just got smaller over time?
That's right, yes. So you have the German Spitz, which they do look almost exactly the same. They're just a bigger version and they're right through up to the Samoyeds and those. So, yes, it was just selective breeding. Somebody wanted to have these little dogs on their laps and just running around the house. Mind you, don't ever tell a Pomeranian that he's only little. They all think they're 8 foot tall.
Yeah.
You can take on the universe. They're reading their size down. They didn't tell them that they were doing it.
Yeah, and from what I read, it wasn't just someone that bred them down. Apparently, allegedly, it was someone in royalty. You probably know where I'm going with this.
Yes, Queen Victoria had a lot to do with it. She was, in fact, before George III was also a little bit interested, but she certainly had very much to do with downsizing them. She bought a few over from Germany and just kept them going in her kennel. Yeah, ended up with those nice little ones to sit on your lap. Yeah, dip too, which is
I know. That's what I was going to get to. Apart from that fine tuning of the coat that we've just talked about, tell me a bit about people. They're obviously a dog that does have a bit of a bark to it, and sometimes that bark's louder than you look at it. Is that something you need to be aware of with the breed?
It is. They're very trainable. Okay. They're very enthusiastic is the word I like to use. If you pick them up and cuddle them, they will just relax and just sleep. Put them on the ground and, as I said, they think they're 8 foot tall and they'll take on the postman. But they're certainly very amenable to training. They do obedience. They do all sorts of things. So that barking is a territorial thing. Mm. It certainly can be brought into line, though. You train them to not react to some things, react to others, depending on what you want.
And that's what I love about these podcasts, Nathan, and the Breed Focus. Every time we have someone on, they always tell us their breed is just fantastic. Yeah. It's the best. That's what I love about it. In the end, people just need to stick and value their own breed. Don't worry about anyone else's, what yours is and whatever. It's great. So, yes, everyone tells me it's the best.
Thing about going to shows and all those other dogs on show, all those events that they have, all the agility and things, you can get to see all those other breeds and pat them and cuddle and talk, but you always go home with the best with one.
That's it.
Yours is the best there. Yeah, so, look, we're talking now, and I like to do some research. And please, Robin, is this true that a pom survived the Titanic?
Name Lady. I can't tell you. I'm sorry if it's true or not, but I can imagine they probably did. He probably snuck into someone's pocket, in their pocket or in their bag when they jumped onto a lifeboat.
Look, this is a myth that, unfortunately, from Dr. Google.
Yeah.
And its name's Lady.
Lady. I'm sure a lap dog in first class probably was rescued or put onto a lifeboat somewhere.
You could fit a few of them in your bag or up your jumper. When you look at them and they're lovely and fluffy, if you wet them, they're very tiny. So an adult male only weighs 2 kilos.
Wow.
Something like a Pekingese, which doesn't look a whole lot bigger in the ring when they're out there, it's fluffy, they're closer to 10 kilos. So you're not sticking a Pekingese under your arm to get on the life raft. But
so they're like 80% coat.
Absolutely.
That's right, fluff. That's why the quote they gave me when I did this Google thing was size doesn't measure courage.
Yes. It's about a lot of judges will pick the dog up to gauge weight because, the coat can be very deceiving. But, yes, they should have a profuse coat, which makes them look bigger.
You'd probably buy a jacket for it at the shop and think won't fit it, and you take it and it'll be too big for us.
Look, people that shave their pom and put clothes on it.
Right. I have seen that. Some people do shave them.
Not necessarily. Actually ruin their coat by shaving them.
Yeah. I've heard you should never shave a double-coated dog.
Absolutely not. No. It's an insulator, like sheep. Right. They shave sheep or shear sheep to garner the wool and use it. But a lot of people will shave their pom because they think it's too hot. Not the case. Not the case at all. No. Yeah.
And obviously appearance is one thing, but temperaments are obviously a big part of it as well. And Robin, I'm sure you know the breed standard for the Pomeranian. What does it tell you about what the temperament of a Pomeranian should be? What's their personality meant to be like?
They should be alert, very outgoing, enthusiastic. That's my favourite word for them. Yes, all of those things. You should never have one that's shy and backs off. You don't want aggressiveness, though. You don't want it to be aggressive. So there's a line between being outgoing and assertive, as opposed to being aggressive. They like to be out there and show off their stuff. They're actually the only dog that has a movement included in their standard. They are allowed to pirouette when moving.
Pirouette?
Oh, wow.
Which is that little spin that they do.
Yeah.
That's actually permitted. for the.
I'm going to let you into the secret.
And in fact, almost expected because they get so excited.
Just have to spin around in a sense.
It's interesting because.
I just need to throw a spin in there because you're just not keeping up. Come on.
Mary spins when I grab food from the kitchen. I'm walking outside to feed them. She does this spinning, just gets it because it's.
You wonder how they can come out of it and still stand upright.
Yeah, just spinning doesn't stop until the food goes down. It's interesting. Yeah.
And so that's in the standard pirouette. Pirouette is part of the gait and the movement.
Yes, that's right.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. And the other thing as well, obviously, George touched on a few sort of myth-busting preconceptions about the Pomeranian. Obviously, one is, people think they're small, but they've got a lot of stature and courage. Are there any other myths that you think people have about the Pomeranian that you want to bust here on the podcast?
A lot of people will tell you that they're not suitable for children, but I'll tell you they are more than suitable for children, obviously under supervision, but that goes for any breed, really, any breed at all. They need to be supervised.
Yeah.
I guess the thing with kids is that they are only a little dog, and so they can be crushed easily, and if dropped from a height, obviously they might break. And so they're not a fine bone dog, but they're not a strong bone either. Those sorts of things. People think that they're snappy and barky. Again, any dog can do that. It comes down to the training, the socialization as puppies, which we put a lot of importance on. I have three grandchildren that help me with that, which is great. All my puppies get to meet my grandchildren and play with them every day after school and before school.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it can just be pulling at things and doing things to a dog that it just seen it.
Exactly right. My very first pom, my grandson grabbed at his coat, and my grandson was 8 months old. He grabbed a handful of coat, which was okay until he twisted his hand, and it was that split second. And of course, the dog panicked. They're best of friends now, but it's taken 7 years to learn to tolerate each other again. Well, yeah.
Gosh, if they're only 2 kilos, kids probably don't know their own strength, and they'd be barreling them over, and they wouldn't even know.
That's the thing, yeah. Yeah, so it's about teaching the kids that, look, they're only this size. But they're a good size too, because as an adult, they can jump up and down off the lounge, up and down off a bed, because they're agile enough for that sort of thing. You wouldn't let a puppy do it just until they're fully grown. They make great little pets. Yeah.
And in this current environment where it's challenging to sell puppies because the demand is just not there at the moment, how are you going, Robin, with your sales? I hear from a lot of people that some don't have that issue because they've got a waiting list and they've been breeding for a while. How are you finding the current environment? I thought I'd just ask, when it comes to potential buyers, are you finding that the right pool is helping you immensely?
Absolutely.
Here we go.
George loves to put in a plug.
I love Right Paw. It makes life so easy because you can just do that group message and keep everything all in one place. Yes. But then within that one place, there's little places you can put them. Oh, future litter or, they've already got one. So I can keep up with everyone that's already got a puppy, or I can, let those future people know that, hey, all right, there's a litter coming. I'd love that. And the sales are really good. Again, that really helps out.
And do you find that most people that purchase are ones that have had it previously or in the family, or is it new people?
Yeah, are they new people interested in the breed?
Yeah.
I'd say it's about 50-50. Anyone that's already had a pom always seems to come back wanting another one. Mm. And often those that have already had poms, they have a couple and they're in a different age range. And so as an older one passes on, they come back for a younger one to replace, and it just follows through. They have that cycle of poms. Mm. When it comes to sales, we always have a waiting list because Pomeranians, as you would know, only generally have one or two a litter.
I was going to say, usually they're very small litters, they're very small dogs.
Yeah, small dogs, small litters.
Why is that?
I'm going to ask you that question, George. I'm going to deflect that back to you. Why do they, when a mouse can have 15 babies, why does a pom only have one or two?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's got to be something environmentally. Maybe it's telling you that.
That's worldwide. And yet the German Spitz, which is technically the next size up, they'll have 5 and 6 a litter. So when, as a breeder, you have a litter and you've only got two, and you probably had the litter because you want to keep one yourself to show or to replace breeding stock, that only gives you one to sell, and that's if you've got two to start with.
It's interesting because litter sizes are based on the MHC or the variability in this MHC region, which helps determine it. And you'd think maybe there's it's just something that's evolved over and it hasn't developed. So usually if you've got a wide MHC between two breeding partners, then you'll have a larger litter size. I don't know. I'll have to look into it.
That's a good topic in itself. I reckon we
I was thinking maybe being an ancient breed, but you're telling me that there's breeds of similar history that have larger litter sizes. Maybe
that's
it's
right.
Just...
And in saying that, I have a bitch who just had a litter of four in January, which is almost unheard of.
That's a Guinness Book of... It's a world record. Can
Absolutely.
Make the Guinness Book of Pomeranian Absolutely. World Records.
That's her second litter. Her first litter, she only had two. And then, surprise, surprise, she had four. And the dog is a used dog. He's only ever produced two in his previous litters. But suddenly, with the two of them mixed, we might have to get their genetics out, I think, and have a look.
Yeah,
look, you can do inbreeding coefficients, but whether that's real, maybe it's a podcast topic.
I reckon that is. I'm sure breeders out there are wondering, how can I maximize my litters, especially for small breeds? Is there something that we're missing?
Yeah,
or is it
or
just
what you do is just do, this is going to be controversial, but the Pomsky.
Gosh.
Pomsky.
Oh, God.
I knew I just wanted to get it out there. I've had a few Pomskys come my way.
Get inquiries all the time. Somebody wants a Pomsky or they want a teacup Pomeranian.
Gosh. Yeah.
I suggest they go and get themselves a guinea pig.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't get, how much smaller do you want to go?
They are the smallest breed. The smallest recognised breed, you're going to have to get a guinea pig or a rat if you want something.
Pocket Pomeranian. Good. Gosh.
Yeah. You better note that one down then. That's another talk we're going to have.
I feel like Pomsky's was a bit of a phase and now it's died away a little bit.
Oh, it raises its head every so often.
Yeah, it does. I don't get that many, but whatever.
I mean, for any listeners that are wondering what that is, it's a Pomeranian cross husky, which again is just a genetic nightmare. It's very bizarre.
It's almost a how on earth did that happen?
Yeah. Well, there's only one way I think it could happen.
Yes. Yeah. That's I think there are some unethical people out there that will breed the German Spitz and sell them off as Pomeranians because as a cute little fluffy puppy, they don't necessarily, you can't tell. Yeah. And because by using a German Spitz bitch in particular, you can get more puppies.
Yeah. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to just increase litter sizes and trying to do
increase their profit margin. Profit. Yeah.
Leave it to George to bring up a controversial topic. He always knows how to stir the pot.
I like stirring the traditional breeders.
Yes.
It just gets them all irate. They'll all be on there, the chat and this and that. That's okay. But as I said, there's no better breed than the breed that you have.
That's exactly.
So I tell people just focus on yours and don't worry about these Pomskys and whatever.
That's right. We just have to market ours the best we can.
That's right. Good.
And that's where Ripaul comes in.
The original and the best Pomeranian.
Yes.
Speaking of people that are looking for Pomeranian, a question that we often get asked is what are some of the important health tests that people that are looking for Pomeranians, what health tests should breeders be conducting on the Pomeranian? They're a relatively healthy breed, but are there any things that people should be making sure their breeders test for?
Look, some of the things we look for, and some of it you can test through genetics, others is more related to what your vet can look at. Mm-hmm. So you've got Cushing's disease, black skin disease and alopecia, hypoglycemia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing all of them correctly. Hyperthyroidism, syringomyelia. I can never do that one.
Yeah, that one's,
The patellar luxation is what I've usually get. Knee joint problems. There's some of that tracheal collapse that you see sometimes in it. But genetically, they're quite healthy when it comes to genetic tests. But as Robin has addressed, people need to be aware there are hereditary problems in a breed that you can't manage via a simple genetic test. You have to manage it through other means, and they're complex. And usually it means understanding your pedigree and looking at things through your pedigrees. Every bird, no breed can be guaranteed to be healthy for life.
I had a puppy last year that unfortunately developed a heart murmur. And for all the investigation we've done, we can only assume it was a very difficult birth. She got stuck. And so they're suggesting that all the vets and the heart specialists are suggesting it was the trauma at birth that brought on this very mild heart murmur.
So I usually have a model, and I usually a thing that Nathan's aware of too, and I always give this advice to breeders. If it's something that you've, if it's a first time mating and you see a specific condition in that pup or two pups in that first time mating of the litter, then I tend to say it is most likely hereditary. If you've been breeding that pair for a while and all of a sudden something appears randomly in a litter, second litter, third litter, then it's most likely something spontaneous or environmental or the trauma that's caused it. You know,
that was the case in this puppy. So it was a repeat litter, nothing in the previous, nothing from either side, dam or sire, like previously.
And it's generally the rule that works. If you've done a first-time mating and you get a litter and there's something in two pups that just is just not right, then you don't, you avoid that mating because it's most likely, unless you've had the litter in the middle of Chernobyl during the radiation disaster, yes, but if it's happened in Sydney, and then you're pretty much, then you should avoid it. And if you want to use that pair or one of those dogs, just make sure you mate it to another one that's not related by pedigree. Avoid anything in that pedigree. So that's generally right.
And being open and honest too.
That's right.
Don't hide those things. I tell everybody when I come up with things like that, because if they want to walk away from my breeding because they're worried about it, then that's their ignorance. You give them the information and they make their choices.
Agree.
That's the way to do it.
Absolutely.
You don't get any surprises that way.
So it's important that people understand in this whole, you're trying to have this symphony of genetic health testing, whatever, you're the conductor, and it's sometimes difficult to just say, I'm just going to do genetic tests. You've got to really be able to understand your pedigree. There's vet assessments.
Physical tests, yeah.
That's right. Do it all. And some people, it's always hard for those that are starting in the breed because you're starting with something new. Whereas if you've been breeding for 10, 15 years, you should be aware of any issues in your breed. You can't literally go, I wasn't aware of that. You should be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Ignorance is never an excuse. No. And I started gathering information and talking to my mentors in Pomeranians a good 10 years before I got my first one. And I think you have to research, you have to look into them and know who you're talking to and who you shouldn't be talking to.
Yeah. And I think, Robin, that's one of the problems you have is you have some of the ones that are just starting, and this is across every breed, who just think they can get it right straight away.
Yes.
It's not going to. It's going to take you four, five, six generations to work it out. Yes, when you first start, you don't really know what's in the background, and maybe you just need to trial a few things. That's how most breeders started.
Yeah. I think that's one of the cool things. Robin and I were at the Canberra Royal a couple of weeks ago, and I think what I saw with the Pomeranians is there's a lot of younger breeders coming through, which I think is really exciting. And I think because they're such a popular and attractive breed, there are a lot of younger breeders coming through. Would you say that's right, Robin?
Absolutely. And we're trying very hard to mentor those to come through. 10 years ago, it was a really closed society. But we're trying to really open that up and welcome people and mentor them. And as George said, they're not just turning up and suddenly having puppies. They're coming along, they're learning. We often get together as a group and talk breeding. We have puppy play dates. Whenever anyone's got a litter, we all gather around and do our little puppy class and puppy puzzles, we call them. Everyone gets to go over a puppy and pick the good and the bad, and then we compare notes, say, all right, you newbies, you missed this or you missed that, or yes, well done, you picked up on that, you picked up on this.
That's great. It's such a good, it's great to hear that's happening in the community as well, because, there can be some communities that are a bit more closed, so it's awesome to hear that, you're opening sort of the floodgates for the newer breeders coming through.
Yeah, we do it with the Pomeranian Club are doing similar things. We're having companion pet shows and things, which... So people that have got not necessarily a ANKC pedigreed Pomeranian, they have something else, but they can come along and have a little practice at showing and introduce them to the world of knowing what you're buying.
Yeah, brilliant. But inclusive.
It's not buying the unregistered cars. Not good.
Look, Robin, you may be a bit younger than your sister, but you're a lot wiser.
We're going to have to cut that bit out.
Edit that.
Tolerate that.
Di will come for you.
Di would. I just would. It doesn't speak.
She won't tolerate that.
No, she won't. Anyway, excellent. You've said it's true. It's interesting. You said I like that.
Well, she and I are going to write a book one day.
I think you should. I think there's a TV series in it as well.
We do a lot of driving together. If she drives, I take notes. Yeah. We'll turn it into a book.
Yeah, I love it. Robin, before we let you go, I have to ask, obviously you've been in the Pomeranian world a little while now. Do you have any stories that stick out in your mind, favorite Pomeranian moments at home, at a show, anything, any funny stories along the way?
Oh, goodness, yeah. There's probably a few. Oh, put me on the spot, goodness.
No, you right. should be able I mean, to just...
Let's go back to introducing new people to Pomeranians. I think Isla.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So she, I met her a few years ago and she slowly but surely got herself around to, she knew she wanted a Pom and she asked all the right questions. And 3 years ago, she came along to her first show ready to help. And it turned out that I had too many dogs needing to go back in the ring. And one was only a very young little bitch, but very promising. So I said to Isla, here you are, baptism of fire. Take this little girl. Her name's Sadie. You'll be right. You'll be at the end of the line. Just relax and do your thing. Well, didn't they win the 12-point best of breed? The two of them, first time in the ring, and little young Sadie's second time in the ring or something. That's one of my favourites. Yeah. And we are a few years later, Isla's now had her first litter and she's well Incredible. And truly, yeah. Yeah, so it's nice. Good. And Sadie remembers her every time she sees her. And just goes to pieces, which is lovely. Yeah.
That's fantastic. That'll have been so rewarding as well. Not only see a dog you bred, but also a mentor that you helped.
Yeah, it was interesting because when the judge pointed and I looked down the line thinking, damn, who was that? And then realised who it was. And I was like, oh, I think I nearly cried. Yeah. It was very exciting for her. Yeah. Very
good. Good story.
It's very special. Love that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh. Very special people.
That's great. Robin, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about your favorite breed, the best breed.
Absolutely.
And how many have you got running around with you at home?
Oh, they're all over the place out there at the moment. I have 11 out the back because I've got some puppies. So, yeah.
Oh, exciting.
Good crowded at nice. The moment. Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting
anytime.
Me.
Anytime.
I hope you've got some information you can use.
Totally.
Absolutely. Right. We love promoting lots of different breeds and breeds. I think it's exciting to have such passionate breeders behind every single breed because behind the breed, there's a breeder doing all the heavy lifting in the background.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, that's exactly right. One of my favorite sayings is that the only thing more contagious than enthusiasm is a lack of enthusiasm. Yeah. It's all about the enthusiasm for me. Oh, wonderful. Thanks, Nathan. Thank you, George.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Bark. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed the podcast. You can visit rightpaw.com.au for your all-in-one place to find responsible, verified breeders. And you can visit orivet.com.au for all your pet genetic testing needs. Remember to stay positive and we'll see you in the next episode.